So by being able to have this type of infrastructure in place, you can figure out how efficiently those people are working, and they can also measure themselves to be able to make sure that they're working productively as well.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creators, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Twice a week, we will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Unconventional Life, this is your host, Joel Schroeder, in Boulder, Colorado today. Today's guest is joining us from Ottawa, Canada, Liam Martin in the house. Liam, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
For sure. Let's go.
Awesome. I am excited, Unconventional Life family, to dive in with all of you today. Liam is the co-founder and CMO of Time Doctor and Staff.com. So think about this as accounting software for your time. These two companies literally tell you where you're putting your time and ultimately how efficiently you can spend your time throughout the day. It's like an analytics type of software for Google. We'll get into the specifics in a little bit. But more than that, you know, I know you guys also work a lot with those working remotely. You personally, you know, your team is 80 employees over 27 different countries all over the world. Mm-hmm. Each of those companies individually is doing seven figures. And you're also, you know, running this conference called Running Remote in Bali in June. And so a lot of exciting pieces that are happening. But with that, you know, Liam, fill in any gaps that I might have left out. Give us a glimpse of your personal life and you know, welcome to the Unconventional Life Show.
Well, I spend most of my day with mermaids. I actually have my partner of the last 5 years. She runs a school, a mermaid school, and she has about 15 different locations all throughout the world. I'm actually here in my home office because there's a blizzard out in Canada right now, and I'm surrounded by mermaid tails and mermaid posters. So not my usual kind of work environment, but that's something interesting that's happening right now to me.
Yeah. You know, out of all of the tell me about yourselves, I don't think I've heard that one before in the realm of a
there
mermaid.
You go.
Cool. And it's she sounds like a you know quite an impressive woman.
Yeah, definitely.
So have you tried on the mermaid tails yourself?
I tried them on once and
what was it like?
It didn't work out too well for me. I'm not a very good swimmer. She's a fantastic swimmer.
Yeah.
And what I'm really passionate about is business in itself. So when she initially pitched me the idea for a mermaid school, I thought to myself, that doesn't really sound like a good idea, but it ended up being a fantastic idea. And it just kind of reinforces you. Sometimes when you pitch somebody, they may not be your ideal customer.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys that just can't swim are not the ideal customer for a mermaid school. So it worked really well for women. And she's had incredible growth over the last couple of years. And what I'm very passionate about is being able to work on a business that in no way relates to mine, because I just love kind of building businesses at their core.
Yeah, so awesome. Well, I imagine you guys are both good balances for each other. Her, you know, on one side of the spectrum and you on the other. And, you know, I'd love to, you know, learn a little bit more about timedoctor.com, staff.com. We'll get kind of more into the specifics, but if you could kind of give us more of the world, you know, I shared about it in the introduction, but just really what's so unique about what you're doing. And, you know, when I heard about it, I was like, this is so applicable to our audience. And so tell me about what you saw was missing, you know, in the market, and then what timedoctor.com, staff.com, what they're doing and how ultimately they're a really great piece.
Sure.
That's offering.
So right now I'm doing a podcast with Jules, and I've currently been working on that task for 11 minutes and 23 seconds. And at the end of this call, I'll be able to analyze that in combination with the other couple hundred podcasts that I've done from that I've recorded basically through Time Doctor. And I'd be able to analyze how efficiently I'm completing these podcasts and what trend lines are starting to present. So am I on Google Apps most of the time? Am I on Facebook? Am I getting distracted and maybe I'm going to Facebook or YouTube or something like that while I'm actually on a call with you? I'm not doing that in this case, but all of those variables kind of tie into themselves so that I can figure out not just how long I'm working, but how efficiently I'm working. And that's really the big differentiator for anybody, particularly entrepreneurs that have a little bit of kind of ADHD at hyperspeed type of perspective, which is most people cannot stay focused on a single task. I personally believe that the new economy is really a distraction economy. So whoever can distract you the best usually makes the most money. The video game that distracts you from your focus the most makes the most money. Facebook is basically distraction crack. That's why if I went to Facebook right now, I would actually get a pop-up saying, are you still working on Podcast with Jules? And then I could say, well, yes, I am. And it would keep tracking and collecting that data. Or I would say no, and I'd be able to go onto my Facebook and come back to what I'm currently doing. But we're giving you that last opportunity to pull you back into productivity before you completely leave. And the use case that our customers really see is when they deploy this for their remote teams. So most of our customers manage remote employees all over the world. And those remote employees, you have basically no idea what's currently going on in their lives and how efficiently they're working. So by being able to have this type of infrastructure in place, you can figure out how efficiently those people are working, and they can also measure themselves to be able to make sure that they're working productively as well.
Would you like to take your life and business to the next level? Join us for a 5-day business accelerator ranked by Inc. magazine as the number one event for entrepreneurs to attend in 2018. We will be bringing together 32 different game-changing entrepreneurs, artists, influencers, and thought leaders from all around the world this April 19th through 23rd in South Africa. We are literally staying on a safari reserve filled with tons of giraffes, zebras, every kind of animal that you can imagine. We will also be bringing in a bunch of guest speakers, those that have been featured on the podcast in the past. We'll be having different excursions and really coming together to elevate every area of your life. Learn more at unconventionallifeshow.com/South Africa to get all the details.
Yeah, so good. And I mean, you know, especially too, like being the culture of digital nomads, remote workers, even those, you know, that are in corporate companies or Fortune 500 companies, having these remote teams, it always is that question mark. You know, my whole team for Unconventional Life, we all work virtually for the most part as well. And how is it when, like, do you feel guilty when the app pops up and you're like, I am going onto Facebook and I am still doing podcast rituals, for example? Like, is there any type of psychology in terms of like retraining your brain so that you have more awareness of it? Or is it really in the purpose of data? Or like, I'm just imagining myself if I was like, you know, that moment where you're on a conference call and it goes long and then you do kind of browse a little bit more. If there's some psychology component inside of the recording too.
Absolutely. The notification pop-ups that we have are specifically built on trying to train you to be more efficient. So we can monitor what you're doing, but that's not going to make you any better at your job. That's not going to make your work any more efficient. What we want to do is to provide you a software kind of anti-distraction tool where we're going to give you that last pop-up saying, hey, you're currently leaving productivity. You're currently leaving productivity town and you're entering Distractionville and you need to stop if you don't want to do that. And if you want to keep going, go ahead. And that's something that's been really important for us. I mean, we primarily built it as a productivity tool, and then we just found such a huge use case in the remote team world that we just really focused on that as a clear vertical.
Yeah, that's so good. So I want to go back in time just a little bit. And, you know, I know we've been hearing our audience so far in terms of, you know, who is Liam now as the co-founder, CMO, you know, of these two companies. But if we were to be a fly on the wall of you in your earlier years, you know, say grade school or high school or even university, like what would it have looked like? What kind of kid were you? What kind of person were you? And ultimately, like if we could get, you know, the little breadcrumbs so we could start to understand how you've become the person you've come today.
Sure. So I actually started working on Time Doctor from another business. So I was at McGill University pursuing graduate school And my goal was to be a professor, to be a lecturer. And I was given the opportunity to teach a class. So not just be a teaching assistant, but actually teach a class. And this was my time to shine. So I got up there, I started running the class. I think it was 300 students. And by the end of the semester, I ended up with a little less than half of the class still staying there. I was not a very good lecturer at all. And so I walked into my supervisor's office and I asked him, I actually basically just told him, I said, I'm not very good at this. And he said, no, you are not. And I said, so what should I do? And he said, well, you know, if you want to kind of pursue this type of profession, you're going to have to do that for about 30 to 40 years. It's kind of part of the deal. So realized that that's not what I wanted to do. And I ended up throwing a thesis under his door to get a master's degree and then went on to actually start tutoring kids. And I was actually making a lot more money tutoring very quickly than from lecturing. And I turned that into a virtual tutoring company. And that led to a couple hundred tutors throughout North America and Europe. But the problem that that business had was I would get a student, I'd bill them for 10 hours of work time per month, and they would come back to me saying, hey, I didn't work with my tutor for 10 hours, I only worked with them for 5. Then I go to the tutor, and I would say, hey, did you work with Jimmy for 10 hours? And the tutor would say, of course I did. I didn't work with him for 5, I worked with him for 10. But what I'd end up having to do is refund Jimmy for 5 hours and pay the tutor for the full 10 hours. And that was destroying the business. So Time Doctor could have basically provided me with a perfect framework to scratch my own itch. That tool would have totally saved that business. So that's why for us, it's so important to kind of, that's how I basically got into business, was thinking to myself, man, this is something that I've kind of just gone from itch to itch.
Yeah.
For anybody starting a business, I highly suggest, you know, if you're not truly passionate about what you're doing, it's not your problem, you're not willing to commit the next 5 to 10 years of your life into it, you're probably going to fail.
Yeah. You know, I like that you talk about scratching your own itch and it being your problem, right? Because there are so many problems. And this is something, especially my earlier years of entrepreneurship, where it's like idea after idea after idea of like, that would be a $1 million idea. Oh, that would be a $1 million idea. Yep, that one too. And those are ultimately not mine. And, you know, the scratch your own itch, I relate to it as following your highest excitement. You know, what's the thing that you can't not do? The thing that you're just so automatically doing. And I think for those listening, especially that maybe haven't had proof of concept, you know, it's one thing to get the scratch your own itch and then the other to be like, how do I even go to step one? Like, what's even step one of putting that in? And then what's step two and step three? Was there advice, like when you were first finding your confidence to execute on these ideas, like things that you did or things that you know now that you could recommend in really building that first muscle into the world of execution?
Not many people know about this, but I have I just ended up getting I have a friend of mine who has a business, and he has these like quasi permanent tattoos. So these tattoos will last for a year. And I actually just got one put on me. It's kind of like trainer wheels if you want to get a real tattoo. So I've had this idea in my own mind. Some people agree with this, some people don't agree with this, but I have focus tattooed on my hand, so that every time I look at my smartphone, I realize, am I doing what I really am supposed to be doing? Or am I doing what, kind of my lower self wants to do? So focus is it's 90% of the game. If you can keep doing something that's already working. So let's say you have 5 or 6 things and one of them is working. And if you just took your energy from those other 4 things and you put it into that one thing and you worked on that for a quarter, you'd be way farther ahead than trying 20 more things over the year.
Yeah.
And this is reinforced in business model after business model after business model. So that was my biggest lesson that I learned, was focusing is the entire game. It's not the sexy game. It's actually, and ironically, quite ironically, it's polar opposite to most entrepreneurs' personality types, because they want to try everything, right? They want to get distracted by that other $1 million idea or $10 million idea, or, oh man, if I only built this ICO, I'd raise $80 million. You could, sure. Why don't you stay focused on this $1 million business for right now, though? Yeah. Why don't you just keep working on that? Turn that into 3 million, because you know you're going to turn that into 3 million the next year, right? But you know, I really want to try the $80 million one. Okay, but you know, maybe, I mean, that is a chance and this is definitive. So that's my biggest lesson, is focus on focus on what's working. Don't stop, don't become distracted, and just keep going.
Yeah, that's such good advice. You can even get it tattooed. Semi-permanent, though. Right. So, you know, I'm wondering, just to play devil's advocate, you know, with you, Liam, you know, someone's like, okay, Liam, like, yeah, I get it, right? Focus. Like, it's a great idea. And like, you know, I can't focus. Like, meaning that like, or here's another way to say it, is I'm actually just a person who multitasks. You know, I love to just do a lot of things at once. I can have like 150 tabs open on my browser. Like, it totally works for me. I imagine you have actually, especially through Time Doctor as well, really looked into like some of like the science and psychology behind multitasking and sure. how that relates to focus. And I'm just wondering if you could give us your perspective on like, is multitasking effective? Is it ineffective? Like, what's actually happening in our brains while that's happening, and just share a little bit to that world of it.
Sure. Well, so, I mean, a couple questions for you. What do you, how long, what kind of a distraction do you think a Facebook message is to you in your workday?
Well, Facebook might not be the best example, because most of my clients come from Facebook.
Okay.
No.
Let's call it a Instagram post. Let's say that someone sent you an Instagram DM. What do you think that's worth in terms of the energy being pulled away from your day?
For me, it occurs like maybe 5 to 10 minutes maximum.
Okay. So the average amount of time that a Facebook message takes, as an example, so like a notification saying, hey, Johnny has a new cat, and check out Johnny's cat pictures. I don't know why I'm picking on Johnny constantly, but the average time that it takes for you to get back into a flow state is on average 16 and a half minutes.
Wow.
For each notification, not just, oh, I'm going to go play on Facebook, or I'm going to go play on Instagram. So every time you open up Instagram on your phone, you're giving away on average 16 minutes of your workday. So string 5 or 6 of those together and you're in pretty big trouble. The average in an office, the average workday, and what I mean by workday is the amount of work that someone does throughout their day in an office, works out to about 3 hours and 50 minutes. So the rest of that time out of that 9 to 5 is spent doing things around work. So whether that's going to the washroom, having lunch, playing solitaire, getting Facebook notifications, chatting with people, it's all things around work, but it is not work. So I always argue with people that they should just show up at 9, work their butt off till 12, and then go home after lunch, because you'll actually get the same results. And since we have such a large network, we've got the largest second by second work database on planet Earth. I back this up with a lot of quantitative data. So this is what these distractions are really not just the, oh yeah, I'm going to just check that Instagram post once, or I'm going to just check that Facebook post once. It is a continuous distraction engine that, by the way, billions of dollars have been invested in trying to figure out how to distract you. More than billions. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been invested in how to distract you, and they've got it down to a science. So you need to be able to control yourself against those types of things, because it's not just, everyone thinks it's a 1 to 2 minute distraction, when in reality, it's a 16 minute distraction per distraction. That you tie up 10 of those and your day's done.
Yeah. Wow. So insightful. I imagine like coming back to that database of like hours that you've collected, like you've probably, like it'd probably be really alarming to kind of see like where time is going. And for someone that's listening, Liam, and that's like, you know what? Okay, cool. I'm totally guilty of that. Yeah, that's me. Yeah, I do that probably even more and I'm probably even less effective. And they're an entrepreneur. How would you recommend as an entrepreneur, as entrepreneurs hearing this, that they can ultimately come into their optimal like workflow zone? Like, is there a recommendation of like, okay, sit down for X amount of minutes or X amount of hours. Like, can you paint us a good potential solution in terms of a great effective, you know, workflow zone?
Sure. I think there are some general rules of thumb that people can follow that at least have been very helpful to me and is backed up with a lot of science. I divide my workspace from my home space. So I do have an office that I go to. However, even in my own home, let's say you're working at home, you should create a space that you only work out of. So maybe your phone shouldn't be located in that space. Or if you're going to actually have a personal phone call or interaction with somebody, you should do it out of that space. You should keep kind of a sacred workspace just for doing work and divide the rest of your home from those places. Another, you know, I find for me, it's just, there's a lot of other kind of techniques where you'll set 45 minutes of focused time to be able to work on something and all these other types of techniques. But one of the biggest ones that I have that I always like to teach to people is just to try to figure out how to get into flow state. So flow state is when you have everything available to you to accomplish a task and you're excited about accomplishing that task. And if you can get into that state as much as possible, a lot of people, you know, writers call it, you know, being in the flow, even athletes call it, you know, like getting in the zone, getting in the groove. That's that magic where you've got everything that you need to be able to accomplish the task and you're excited about accomplishing the task. So getting yourself into that state as quickly as possible is usually the best rule of thumb. So that means removing distractions, number one, and then number two, making sure that you have everything available to you to be able to accomplish that task. Not many people really kind of get that part of it. So inside of our business, you know, whenever we have a task that we want to complete or that I assign to somebody else inside of the company, I usually say, well, instructions shouldn't be easy to understand. They should be impossible to misunderstand. And getting all of those pieces in place so that I know exactly where we're going and exactly what to do next, it just means I can flow right on ahead and accomplish my goals. So those are the two big things that I would say is get yourself into flow state and then create a sacred space that can protect you from the distraction economy that exists everywhere in our lives.
Yeah, so good. I really like that terminology, the distraction economy. I feel like it, you know, I've always related to it as this like overstimulation piece and it really fits. It fits for my world. And, you know, I've heard a lot of our guests, you know, echoing similar things that you have as well. And it brings me back into Time Doctor. And, you know, I know you have grown this company, you know, to around seven figures and you've got all these different customers. And so tell me from the point, you know, where you noticed that itch, like you said, you got that inkling, saw that this was a missing in the early onset of really taking that from idea and conception and really going on to gain your first few customers and gain your momentum and you know what that was like.
Well, that was a couple of years ago, but that was pretty exciting. I think the biggest moment for us was when we went from a free beta product to a paid product. And that's always scary for people in SaaS, which is what the type of business that I'm in, software as a service. So instead of just paying a large sum, you pay a much smaller amount on a monthly basis. So like a Spotify subscription, as an example, is technically a SaaS. So we were giving everybody this software for free. And then the debate came down to, well, is it good enough to charge people for it? And That was a long debate, and that was a debate that was actually really frustrating. And knowing what I know now, I would tell anyone that's looking to build a piece of software, always charge for it right up front. Because what happened was we had all of these free users that were using the software to some degree. And we were getting some customer feedback, so bug feedback and that kind of stuff. But what we wanted to do is we always wanted more of that, and we were scared that we were going to lose this customer feedback if we charged customers. But we said, you know, we've got to charge people eventually. You can't just keep this stuff for free forever. We've got servers that we got to pay for. So we flipped it over to paid, and something interesting happened. We lost 75% of our weekly active users.
Wow.
So we only went down to about 25% of our weekly active users. However, our feedback 10x'd. Because when someone pays for something, they will tell you when it sucks a lot more than if they're using it for free.
Yeah.
And we actually realized that, man, we really screwed up on that one. We should have started this 6 months earlier, because then we would have gotten that type of early feedback that we needed to evolve the product, you know, 6 months ahead of where it currently was.
Yeah, such a good piece that you're highlighting here. And in the realm of feedback, you know, for those hearing this that, you know, aren't particularly in SaaS and maybe have a different business model, I think feedback, you know, it's something in our company that we're always incorporating. And so could you share a little bit on how to get effective feedback and how you and your company go about getting it? Is it proactive? Is it, you know, retroactive? Just share a little bit about that.
It's both. So, first off, let's say that we're going to deploy a new feature. Usually what we'll do inside of Time Doctor is we'll add that as a feature right inside the dashboard. So let's say that we want to have a payroll feature inside of Time Doctor, which we already have, but let's say that we hadn't built it. We would add in a feature saying payroll on the dashboard. And then when you click on it, you would be brought to a survey saying, hey, it looks like you're interested in a payroll feature. What would you like in a payroll feature? We're looking to build it. So that's one way that we would get feedback, and also just even looking at the click-through rate. And then we also do that in reverse on the dashboard, where if we have a feature that not many people are using that we've deployed, what we will do is we will not tell customers that we're removing it. We'll just remove it. And we'll see how much hate mail we get. Because you'll be able to measure that emotional response. So as an example, when we first started Time Doctor, we initially had a project management feature inside of the app. And we were constantly asking people why they wouldn't use the project management feature. And they'd say, oh, well, you know, I use Basecamp. Yeah, but you're already paying for Time Doctor and this is free project management software. Why aren't you using it? Well, I use Basecamp. And we removed the feature, and I think we got two angry emails off of that feature being removed. And we didn't actually just remove it we didn't remove the URL. People could still access it,
yeah,
but we just removed the button. And so easy to just very quickly iterate and understand what people love and what people hate. So if someone's looking to kind of start a SaaS business or any type of software business, I suggest just removing stuff and seeing what happens. You can always, you can always apologize later, but you can't get that type of emotional response by asking somebody, hey, would you like this? Another thing that we do is when we say, hey, you know, we're thinking about building this new feature, we're thinking about building this conference called Running Remote, and it's going to have these great speakers. It's going to have the founder of Buffer and FlexJobs and Atlassian and GitHub and Doist and GitLab, and it's going to be awesome. And it's all going to be about how to build a billion-dollar remote business. Would you like to go? 98% of people that are in our community would say yes. And then we get a little bit more deeper on that. Well, how much would you be willing to pay? Oh, I'd be willing to pay $800. I'd be willing to pay $400. I'd be willing to pay $2,000. And then at the end of that survey, we would just take that number that they asked for, and we'd say, well, good luck. Congratulations, we're actually doing it. And will you buy it for $2,000?
That's so
it,
good.
Right? Yeah. Like whatever the price that they set, and see whether they'll actually do it. And you'd be blown away. It's why surveys are crap. Dollars makes sense. Never, if you're going to survey somebody saying, would you like ice cream and a hot dog? Everyone will say yes. Basically, everyone will say yes to anything that they're going to get, right? You need to figure out, you're not going to get this. You got to pay for it. Then it becomes a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
So that's how we really measure feedback and interactions. One other point that I'd kind of put on the other side of it too, is whenever somebody stops using our software, what we'll usually do to get feedback on why, basically when they're leaving, is classically, it was always very difficult for us to be able to collect that type of feedback because people don't want to get resold or people don't want to get pushed back into an account. So the question that we ask is, what could we have done to have kept your business? You've already been unsubscribed, but what could we have done to have kept your business? And that's actually one of the best ones for us. We've had a fantastic response rate from it because it's in the past tense. People are relaxed and they're willing to give you the feedback that you need to be able to iterate the product further.
Yeah, so good. So helpful. It reminds me a lot of the Foundation. Have you heard about them before?
No, I haven't.
So the Foundation is actually a school that was founded by two friends of ours, both who have been on the show, Dane Maxwell and Andy Drish, and they basically teach entrepreneurs how to start from nothing to create a SaaS business, you know, software as a service business. And so one of his primary points, though, is they also, you know, really this idea of taking it from an idea to will you pay for it? And it's so good to survey the market. It's so good to get research. It's so good to ask, but with the like, and what is that worth to you? And okay, great. And it's worth that. And would you buy it? And so I love that you're illustrating that point. I think it can often get skipped over and it is, you know, the shortcut to, you know, is this a hobby or is this a viable business model? And so right. I like you sharing that piece. You know, the last piece for you here before we move into the rapid fire round, which is the last part of our show here, is, you know, in the realm of, you know, a SaaS business, you're always, you know, have these recurring, as you said, monthly customers. And for a lot of those that tune in, you know, it is a question, how do you keep customer retention? And how do you keep your product so integrated, like Facebook, why it's been so successful, is that people, it's in their lives, you know, 24/7, they can't put it down. And so how are you activating an emotional experience for your users, and really for anyone that's hearing this, you know, what are you doing to keep people so ingrained with your software that has them month after month after month, you know, keep committed?
So retention could be a completely separate podcast. I love talking about retention because for a SaaS business, and this is really important for anybody who's just getting into it. If you're doing, let's say, more than 5 million a year, more than 5 million a year, retention is the first priority. User acquisition is a secondary priority because at that point, if you're doing, let's say, 5 million a year, you've already got a customer base that's feeding off of referrals so well that you want to make sure that that customer base remains happy. So as an example, if you have a 5% churn rate, which is the amount of customers that leave your business every single month or quarter or year. So let's say you have a 5% monthly churn rate that works out to 60% per year, which means you have to go find 60% of your original customer base before you can make a single net new dollar. That's a big problem when you look at churn and retention. So anyone in the SMB space really has to float around I would say amazing SMB churn, which is the niche that we're in, is 1%, and you're in trouble anything above 5%. And for enterprise, it's like 1% to 2% per month. So with that said, the implementation that we really take on is we make sure that everyone is happy, not just when they buy, but after they buy, and then far into the future connected to that. So first off is most customers that come to see us, they have some type of emotional pain. And usually when you want to market to a customer, unfortunately, the best way to get them to buy is to understand that pain better than they do. And then secondarily, ratchet it up. So most customers come to us saying, I had a meeting with somebody last week and he has 28 people in his office. He had to leave for a family emergency at noon on a Friday. He came back at 2 p.m. and everyone was gone. And by 2:15, he was looking at our software because he had no idea what was going on with his team. And he said, well, when I'm not here, what's going on. And he needed that type of extra granularity. So for us, we really focus on productivity, but there's another component of our business that really focuses on that. What the heck is my team doing? I need to figure out what they're doing. So we come in, we'd say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to deploy this software and make it successful. We ended up buying the software. And we, after that point, we don't just kind of have them, we don't just sell them the software and then say, okay, here you go, have fun. We have, and this is actually by a friend of mine, Joey Coleman, who has the 100-day paradigm with regards to customer service and customer support. So his perspective is that you should spend 100 days after someone buys the product, which is usually the most critical period in which someone will either use the product for 5 to 10 years or will quit within a month. So there's a very critical period in SaaS, 90 days, when someone is really figuring out, okay, I bought this thing, but can we implement it into our company, and is it providing a real actionable service to the rest of our to our employees or to our company in general? So we have this 100-day paradigm where we send them gifts, we make sure that they're onboarded properly, we have customer success people making sure that everything is pumping properly, we have reports that we can review for customers, and we basically provide them an entire framework and funnel to make sure that they're getting success out of the software. And after those 90 days, usually they're pretty happy. A couple years ago, we had 6 to 7% churn inside of the business, and it was fundamentally destroying the business. Now we have 2.5% churn. Wow. And that just in that, you know, that triples the business right there. Same amount of customers, triple the business. That's the kind of magic of customer retention and churn. And it really is, particularly for SaaS, the most important thing that you could possibly do.
Yeah. You know, I love you touching on the 100-day piece. You know, we've incorporated that into my business and to other businesses as well. Such great advice for those listening. Let's transition here. Last part of our show, rapid fire round. A few questions coming at you. Are you ready?
Sure. Yep, I'm all set.
All right. Question number one. Let's do it. Fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
I'm intense.
Awesome. All right. Next question. What is one ritual that you do pretty regularly that you feel sets you up for success?
I drink 750 milliliters of Pellegrino mineral, carbonated natural mineral water every single morning. And I have about 500 of them in my kitchen. Because I feel getting that water into the day, if I can set up my morning properly and hydrate, the rest of the day can go to crap. And at least I've done that.
Yeah. So good. Next question. What is one resource or book that you feel like has made a big impact in your, you know, professional career?
0 to 1 by Peter Thiel.
Such a good one. Last question for you. What does living an unconventional life mean to you?
It means being able to do what other people only dream of doing. And I think that connects with entrepreneurship. You can really do whatever you want, whenever you want, with whoever you want, as long as you want. And that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, so good. Liam, Martin, everyone, Liam, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for one of our listeners.
Sure. So we're doing Running Remote in Ubud, Bali, and it is all about how to build serious remote teams. And I'm always apprehensive about talking about this conference because there are a lot of digital nomad conferences, and we're not that. We are, if you have remote people right now and you want to get better at managing them, better at figuring out how different departments work, building company culture, the bureaucracy of building remote businesses, this is what this conference is going to be all about. And Jules has suggested, and I've gladly accepted, to be able to give away a free ticket to the event. And again, it is in Ubud, in Green School, which is a network of tree houses that we can put about 500 people into. It's going to be the biggest event that they've ever had at Green School. And we're really excited about it. I think it's going to be up until now, no one's really built a conference of this size on how to build remote teams, because there really is no playbook on how to build a remote team. So we're really excited about having it. And Jules, you're probably going to figure out how to actually hand out that ticket.
Yeah, we are. And it's such a generous offer. It sounds incredible. For those tuning in, you can head over to unconventionallifeshow.com and click on the giveaway tab and we'll select one of our winners. We always love to get emails from you guys as well. So you can feel free to email us if you really, really want us to pick you. And we'll throw your hat in the ring. And Liam, for those that, you know, want to know more about, you know, timedoctor.com, staff.com, you know, really these services we've talked about, what's the best way for them to get information about those things?
Best way is just to go to the site and sign up for a trial. That way you can really experience the software. You're more than happy to email our support. They're really great at figuring out how the software works, and we'll bring you through it from beginning to end. And then for anybody that's interested in running remote as well, best thing to do is to just check out the speakers that are going to be talking. I think they're just we were so blown away at the response that we got from the quality of speakers that are coming. So we think it's going to be something very special. So go check those out as well.
Yeah. So awesome. Liam, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with our listeners today. Unconventional Life Family, I got a ton of value out of this episode. Hope you guys did as well. We'll have more awesome content coming at you soon. Thanks again, Liam.
Would you like to take your life and business to the next level? Join us for a 5-day business accelerator ranked by Inc. magazine as the number one event for entrepreneurs to attend in 2018. We will be bringing together 32 different game-changing entrepreneurs, artists, influencers, and thought leaders from all around the world this April 19th through 23rd in South Africa. We are literally staying on a safari reserve filled with tons of giraffes, zebras, every kind of animal that you can imagine. We will also be bringing in a bunch of guest speakers, those that have been featured on the podcast in the past. We'll be having different excursions and really coming together to elevate every area of your life. Learn more at unconventionallifeshow.com/South Africa to get all the details.